Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. I'm so glad you guys are hanging with me here tonight. And we are talking rock, talking metal with a guy I recently hung out with in Los Angeles for the first time. He's been on the podcast a number of times, but we actually hung in person recently at the Rainbow in Hollywood. Carl Alvarez. Carl, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm pretty good, Mark. It's good to talk to you and good to hang out. When we did the hang, it was like 4 weeks ago, but it was really cool.
Yeah, wow. Time goes by fast. Yeah, about 4 weeks ago. And just so the listeners know who you are a longtime hard rock metal fan. You grew up in the, Orange County area, was it?
I grew up in...
It was a
town called Redlands, which is more of like, they would call it the Inland Empire if you were a Southern California 909, although it was not 909 area code when we were growing up. It was always 714.
Oh, okay.
But, 60 miles east of Los Angeles.
East. Okay. Okay. And you also worked on the Inside Metal documentaries. Which we highly recommended viewing, of course. Great stuff. And you worked with Bob on those, as well as many, Bob Nalbandian, that is, as well as many, many others.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we covered the LA scene very in depth, and definitely it's something you could still watch. It's on Amazon and a lot of other streaming platforms, so I recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start talking about where we hung out in Hollywood, kind of a historic place in the, you know, story of hard rock and heavy metal, the Rainbow Bar and Grill on Sunset in Hollywood. How many times, like, do you frequent the place often? I know you're in California, but you're not necessarily right in Hollywood. Is it a place you get to frequently?
Well, it seems to be a destination point for a lot of people, especially if you're going to go to like the whiskey, like to a show there. It's like, hey, let's meet up at the Rainbow. It seems to be a place for everybody to go.
But you personally, had you been there in a number of years, or when we hung there, was it your first time there in a while?
I usually go up there maybe once or twice a year. Okay. There's always something going on or meeting somebody. In fact, I met my friend. We went to the Sebastian Bach show at the Whiskey probably a couple weeks after we met. So,
oh, really? Okay.
It's a definite, you know, place to meet up and, you know, get a pizza, grab a brew, whatever, see the scenery, hang by the fireplace, whatever, you know?
Right on. Now, the Rainbow, I mean, I first went there, the first time I went there was probably like 2000, No. Yeah, the first time I went there was like 2001 or two, probably 2001. And I've been there many a time since. When I say many a times, I mean you could probably count them all on one, maybe two hands. But I feel like when we were in there, the vibe was a little different than what I remembered it being like the first time I went there back in 2001, which it seemed a little crazier back in 2001. Have you noticed the vibe of the place change through the years?
Yeah, you know, it a lot of times it depends what time of week you go too. Like the weekend was just going to be a circus of different people coming through there. It's just like a big, it's a big destination spot. I mean, people that come to LA, they're the rock people or they're clubbers or hanging out on Sunset Strip. That's just where people go. So you got a mixture. Like when we were there, well, it was a Friday night. There was just a mixture of like tourists and out of towners and locals. You just get a mishmash of just about everybody there, you know?
It seemed like a tame crowd to me though. Cause I remember when I was there in 2001, like, I swear to God, people were fucking doing lines up in the upstairs, like just playing in plain view. Like it was absolutely insane. A guy was selling ecstasy. It was just, and people just seemed like they were out of their mind. It seemed like there was a younger crowd there in 2001. And then I was there probably like 2004. I did an interview with Slash there in 2007, so I can't really count that experience. But then, yeah, I hadn't been there. I think the last time I was there was actually when I interviewed Slash in December of 2007. And that I can't even judge it because that was just like they had the room roped off for Slash. But it seemed like it wasn't as chaotic. Like it didn't seem like it was just like, wow, this is off the hook debauchery and craziness when we were hanging there. And maybe I'm just older and I wasn't there at the right time or something, but it seemed a little more tame to me.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I've gone there. I mean, I haven't seen the lines and I'm sure that's happened before, but you know, it's typically not my scene, but I'm sure it happens and it did happen. And maybe there was a phase where it was more of a debaucherous. I mean, it's got that reputation, obviously. I mean, way before us even.
Right.
I mean, I didn't start going to the Rainbow until like 1986 when I found it on my radar where, hey, we got to go to this Rainbow place. It seems to be the cool hang, you know, and Lemmy's hanging out there and different rock people. Oh, okay, cool. Let's go up there. And, you know, sure enough, there's always somebody there at any given time. I think when we went, it didn't seem to be any sort of thing going on, you know, where, you know, artists were in town or, you know, some sort of, you know, whatever the big thing was happening. Although your next night, that Guns N' Roses show, I mean, you'd think there'd be people hanging at the Rainbow prior to that or after that, you know?
Yeah, it could be. We saw like more like craziness at like this Chateau Maman down the street. Yeah, then we saw at the Rainbow. We saw a little craziness. We had Ron Jeremy walking around while we were hanging there. What was up with him? He wouldn't. We tried to buy him a drink, and he didn't. He said he didn't drink alcohol anymore, but he seemed a little out of it to me, didn't he? I mean, did he? Meds? Or what?
I think I left right after that had happened. I remember you mentioned that and stuff. So he's a fixture. He's always around. It seems you can – it's very good chance you'll run into him anytime, any place. I remember I saw him there. He was hanging with the Nelsons. This is like 93. So like the Nelsons have kind of fallen out. You know, they were still doing their thing, probably had a following. And I remember he was hanging out with one of them. They were – it was kind of a weird thing, like Ron Jeremy and one of the Nelsons. It just seemed like an odd mix, but they were hanging.
Right. Huh. Interesting stuff. Cool. All right. So let's move on. And I wanted to talk about Ozzy Osbourne, one of my favorite topics, because last night I was out at the Last in Line show, which is Vivian Campbell, what's the singer's name? Andrew
Freeman.
Freeman, yeah. And who is great, by the way. And Vinny Appice on the drums and Vivian Campbell. So, you know, essentially two guys from that classic Dio lineup from those first three albums. And then you have, you know, Andrew just doing a great job with the vocals and Phil Soussan on bass. But, and, you know, Phil was part of the Ultimate Sin album by Ozzy Osbourne. And a big part in part of, you know, the main songwriter, I guess, on the song Shot in the Dark. So I've just really been thinking a lot about that album lately. And I recently did a guest spot, the Ultimate Sinner guest spot on Ozzy's Boneyard. And I played Fool Like You off that record. And Ozzy was recently in the press saying he doesn't have fond memories of that record. I can't remember if he said he doesn't have fond memories of making it or he just doesn't like it. It was, or both. But I think it was such a great record for Ozzy, and I wanted to get your opinion on that era of Ozzy's career, which was kind of a unique look and sound for him, because I felt like it had kind of evolved from Bark at the Moon. Bark at the Moon seemed like it was kind of going in a few different directions. In a way, it was like a bridge between the Randy era and where they'd end up with the Ultimate Sin. But yeah, the Ultimate Sin, it was as close as Ozzy ever got to like 80s metal, if you will, in my opinion, like the Sunset Strip bands, you know, it was that's as close as he got to that sound. What were your thoughts about the album, The Ultimate Sin?
I look at that record at 1986. You look at the bands that were signed to major labels. Now, Ozzy always seemed to set the standard with any record that he put out throughout the 80s, throughout the 90s even. I mean, he kind of set the standard. So I think when Bark of the Moon, it was a new band. So they were kind of just formulating the whole coalescence of this new band, you know? And then I think by the time Ultimate Sin came out, it seemed to be the formula had notched up a little bit. The production was a little heavier. Nevison came in there and really dialed them in, the songs. And I think what Ozzy did was he didn't get caught up in commercialism, which a lot of the bands were. And it was a commercial effort, don't get me wrong, but it had a lot of dark, heavy overtones in the music. I mean, Ozzy, Black Sabbath, that they're always going to appear at any given time. But you look at the bands that were on the major labels that were putting out product in 1986, like Sabotage, who had Power of the Night before that. And then they came out with their next record, which was really lightweight. I can't remember the name of the record, but it has the flag on it. And then Raven, here's another band that really started out as a heavy band, and then I think The Pack Is Back was kind of a weak record.
That was the one after It's Hard?
Yeah, I think right around that phase, it would just, they were started to kind of go in this commercial, and it wasn't working for them. And Judas Priest, Turbo, was a kind of a commercial, kind of lightweight, you know. I mean, they still were able to keep it together and do these world tours and stuff. So Ozzy was kind of straddling the line between that, you know. So that record, it's unique in that sense because it kind of embarked on kind of a heaviness, but yet sticking within the Ozzy formula.
Right.
And that Black Sabbath formula, I guess, that he would be doing in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I got, those are my thoughts on that record. And obviously doing the tour with Metallica in the US, that, you know, that's always a smart play. He always got the bands that were kind of breaking or close to be breaking.
Yeah.
And it was always different, you know, he always had a different band warming up, and it fit, you know, it was a good fit.
Yeah, and the Ultimate Sin tour was truly, in my opinion, the introduction of Metallica to the world. I mean, a lot of us underground metal fans knew about Metallica at that point, but you know, they were still fresh on the edge of their major label push at that point. It was an amazing break for them. But I remember, and I think I probably told you this before on a previous episode that you were on, that when I was at that show, there were a handful of people I saw that in Chicago, Metallica opening for Ozzy in 1986. There were a handful of people that were, you know, like left after Metallica played, you know, and were making a big thing about, I'm not staying for Ozzy. Metallica, you know, that's it. And so, which is interesting. And in at that time, too, in 1986, you have to remember, you know, Sabbath now, when we think about 70s era Sabbath, it's just the coolest thing in the world. And everybody thinks, you know, that's the shit. You know, that's the stuff that the building blocks of heavy metal. And it was, you know, along with a few other bands. But in 1986, Sabbath was not cool. And I tell this to younger kids and they don't get it. Kiss with Makeup was not cool in 1986. That was like, oh, that laughable 70s stuff. You know, it just, that cheese ball stuff from the 70s. We don't like that. You know, that's not where we're at now. So
being seen as it's kind of dirty biker motorcycle crew, right, kind of stuff. That's old.
Yeah. And it wasn't until the 90s that both Makeup Era Kiss and, you know, Sabbath, or maybe the late 89, 1990 is really where we started being able to accept certain bands from the 70s, where there were other bands that never really went out of style. Like, I mean, you could say the Eagles, even though they had broken up, Led Zeppelin, you know, those bands were still cool throughout the 80s. I mean, FM radio was embracing them and playing the shit out of Led Zeppelin through the 80s, even though Led Zeppelin didn't exist. The same with the Eagles, even though the Eagles didn't exist at that time, you know, and they were still, you know, championed by the rock stations and people who were controlling the rock magazines and media and stuff, where honestly Sabbath and Kiss weren't until things turned the corner and you know, Alice in Chains and Pantera and stuff started saying, no, that was the cool shit. You know, that was the great shit. And then, you know, suddenly Paul Stanley was like, well, you know what? We're going to start playing more than three or four songs from the Makeup Era in the set list. And you know, Ozzy started bringing back War Pigs into his set list. And whereas for years, Ozzy was only doing Iron Man and Paranoid and a little bit of Children of the Grave, you know? So it was like, it was interesting. Yeah. So, but that was a real interesting time for Ozzy. And to me, it was the closest he got to really embracing the Sunset Strip and 80s metal look and sound. And I loved the album, and I thought it worked terrifically. Well, and it was a good selling album.
In the MTV era, obviously, right, that Shot in the Dark video was really kind of a visual, and it kind of culminated that, like you said, the Sunset Strip kind of thing, when Dweezil Zappa being in the video, and it just kind of had a lot of all the elements. And you know, right, sometimes when you spread things out so far out in the realm, people kind of lose focus of what it's all about. But with Ozzy, it seemed to be always a milestone with every record that he came out with, and it seemed to be like in 1986 that was kind of the milestone record as far as the commercial metal scene goes.
Yeah. So on that note, let's get into some music off that record. The record, of course, side one was The Ultimate Sin, Secret Loser, Never Know Why, Thank God for the Bomb. I mean, I love all these songs. Never I Was So-So On. Side two, Lightning Strikes, Killer of Giants, Fool Like You, Shot in the Dark. I mean, God, what a side two. Epic. I mean, those songs are epic. Fool Like You is a song I recently did on my Ultimate Sinner guest spot on Ozzy's Boneyard on Sirius XM. So let's do another one here on the podcast. This is a song that he played in 1986 when I saw him. Epic Jakey Lee guitars on this. This is Killer of Giants by Ozzy Osbourne. Thank you.
if none of us believe in war, then can you tell me what the weapon's for? Listen to me, everyone. If the button is pushed, there'll be nowhere to run. Oh, giants sleeping, giants winning wars within their dreams.
Giants off the Ultimate Sin album by Ozzy Osbourne, 86, right, Carl?
Yes, March of 1986 it came
out. Nice. Awesome. Cool. So, Carl, I go to a ton of shows. You had texted me earlier, and you're like, maybe we can talk about some of our favorite shows from 2019. And I have to admit, I was getting a little stressed out because I it all kind of blurs together. I'm like, well, when did I see Ministry in New Jersey? Was that 2018? Was that 2019? So I'm right now going through my Facebook page trying to figure out what shows I actually went to in 2019. But let's start with you. What shows jumped out for you as some of your favorite concerts of 2019? Tell us the shows, where you saw them, and what you remember about them.
Well, this past year seemed to be the year of the bands that are classic that were rolling through. I mean, we had Kiss, which I didn't go see, with the farewell tour. But Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, they rolled through our town or our Southern California. And I mean, Priest is always a great show. Rob Halford, amazing. The band's on fire. I mean, Richie Faulkner has really kind of taken the role of the kind of the guitarist of that band, you know. But the other guy did really well too. I mean, the whole thing of Priest, I can always Andy Sneap, and I can just always appreciate. It just brings everything back home when you really see a show with Judas Priest and stuff. And you're right, Heat Warmed Up, which, I mean, there's another band from way, way, way back that still resonates and you can find some new appreciation for, because they created that thing too. And from England and the hard rock, heavy metal, they were the one of the preeminents. Really,
yeah, in my opinion, Uriah Heep. Now, I'm not an expert on the band. I have a couple of their records through the years. But when you look back at it and you read what historians like Martin Popoff, who have really truly studied the heavy metal movement in our form, I mean, Uriah Heep is one of the architects for sure. And mm-hmm. they don't get as much credit as Deep Purple and Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin for starting this hard rock movement. But they were there, and they were definitely an important element in the late 60s, early 70s for taking things to a kind of new level, in my opinion.
And I would have to say, I mean, those two bands, Iron Maiden especially, it was probably like the best show. Anytime I've seen Iron Maiden, hands down, it's so good. They're so good. They played out here at the Bank of California Stadium, and right. It's a big new facility that they had made. And the place was packed, sold out, and it was just an awesome show. They deliver every time. So I was really blessed to go see that show. I saw Uli Roth earlier this year. Amazing.
Wow, cool. Never seen him play live. Wow.
The amazing thing about him, he embraces the Scorpions, his era of Scorpions, which is great. And he's flawless. And the band that he has, they're flawless too. I mean, everybody's firing on all cylinders. No lazy guys in that band whatsoever.
Right. See, for great me, show. I don't know much about him in the Scorpions except one record, Taken by Force, you know, which is a great, great record. I mean, top of the bill, one of the Scorpions' best songs. But I don't know a lot more about him. And it's funny because as a kid, again, this goes back, like I'd see him on the album covers and I was like, oh, I'm not going to buy that album cover because it's got a hippie on it. You know, he had that hippie look, you know, in the 80s. I'm dead serious. And I was like, I didn't get into the Taken by Force record until many, many years later. Of course, back in the 80s, I loved Love Drive. I loved, you know, I'm going blank here. I loved Animal Magnetism. Yeah. And, you know, I was a big fan when Rocky Like a Hurricane hit, was all over that album, Big City Nights. And, you know, Blackout was a big record for me. So I was all over that stuff. But I didn't want to buy that record because I turned it over and I saw a picture of Uli John Roth. And I was like, what the fuck? It's a hippie. I'm not buying a record with a hippie on it. You know what I mean? And I was, yeah. I mean, that's how shallow I was. But that was the 80s, man. I mean, that was like, people weren't into Sabbath. People weren't into Bell Bottoms in 1986. That was, you know, Bell Bottoms and Converse sneakers. That was like, if you wore that shit, you were out of it. You were old man, you know?
Yeah. So,
but Uli John Roth, I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent. Good show.
Great show. Phenomenal. That was back in March. You know, it's the nice thing about it. I always try to catch the bands that are in the clubs that, you know, I saw Danko Jones at this dive bar in Long Beach. Great show. Phenomenal.
Cool.
I mean, this guy is just, Danko Jones just doesn't get enough credit for.
Oh, he's great. He's great. I love his music and think he's so talented. I do have to say it was one of my biggest letdowns for an interview in the 2019. I don't know. I just had such high hopes that it was going to be this amazing interview. And I don't know. We just didn't really vibe on the phone. It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. But there's certain times I interview somebody and there's like just a total connection and the interview flows. And I don't know, like he and I, for whatever reason, I was sad about it afterwards. The interview turned out fine. I think it even got a headline here or there, but it was just like, I don't know, there was no connection. But the show was good. The show was good.
Phenomenal. And awesome. Like I said, I really like to see these world class bands that can tour the world and play in stadiums in Europe. And they play a dive bar in Long Beach, California.
Right.
It's such a great thing. Really.
A lot of people there.
Yeah, it was a fairly packed place. You know, it's just great. You know, you can walk in there and have a beer and just be home by 11, you know, or by 12 right. and not right. worry about it. You know, right local on. Show. Same with Fu Manchu. I saw Fu Manchu back in October. Awesome show at another dive bar or club in Santa Ana, which is close by us. They're another great band. You know, they just don't. They don't get the kudos that they deserve, but they're hardworking, tight as hell, and they do what they do. Their sound is, you know, it is what it is, and you can appreciate it.
I saw them in 2019 also, and they destroyed. So freaking good. Stoner rock at its greatest. I mean, you know, the cover of Godzilla, their tune Mongoose, they just pulled out all the stuff you'd want to hear from Fu Manchu. You know, hard driving, riff driven stoner rock metal. So good. So good. Love those guys.
I would have to say my top show, though, for the year, and it only happened out here. It was the Chris Cornell tribute concert.
Oh, okay. Now, right. I saw some clips and it was good.
Oh, amazing. I think they did a stellar job of the lineups that they had there. And it covered all the bases of Chris Cornell's career. And the people just really brought their own, I guess, take on what Chris Cornell was, but they did it justice. And the concert was really long. It was like 4 hours, but there was not a downtime whatsoever. No boredom whatsoever. And apparently this is going to be somewhere down the line. It's going to be on home video or it's going to be on one of the Time or HBO. So I think everybody will get a chance. I don't know if it's going to be a condensed version of the concert. Like I said, it was 4 hours. So maybe
tell us some of the people who were a part of the tribute concert.
Well, obviously Metallica. They played like 5 songs. They did they reached into some old Soundgarden songs. And, you know, obviously if you're really sub-pop, Soundgarden, or probably it could have been the SST stuff. They were never on Sub Pop. What am I saying? Yeah, the old SST stuff. They ended up playing, I think, 2 old SST catalog songs. So it was really kind of cool, you know. They just kind of brought it to the thing. Miley Cyrus, that was a weird kind of thing. I'm like, is this really going to work? And she bombed kind of on the first song that she did. I can't remember what she did or who she was with because it was different constellations of really high profile artists that were performing. But the second song she did, and I can't remember what it was, she killed it. She really killed it. I was really, really impressed.
I saw a clip of her doing the Temple of the Dog song, right? Say Hello to Heaven.
Yeah. I think that could be it.
And I thought it was good. I thought, I mean, you know, it's like I get it. It's Miley Cyrus, and, you know, a lot of old school hard rock guys and heavy metal guys aren't going to even give her a chance because of her Disney past and, you know, poppy past and stuff. But I there's something about her that I like. I have to say there's something real about her. And I saw her doing that song, Say Hello to Heaven by Temple of the Dog, a clip of that, and I was quite impressed. And I've seen her like do Pink Floyd stuff, and I've seen her, you know, rocking the Metallica and Iron Maiden shirts and stuff, and I get it, you know, she's a pop star, you know, and she does pop music, but I don't know, I like it that she seems to have a true respect for rock, and I don't think it's a poser thing like where she's just wearing an Iron Maiden shirt. I think she actually, and she said it, that she likes the band. I think she has an appreciation for classic hard rock, classic rock like Pink Floyd. And anybody who gets out there and plays the good, true rock for a younger generation who is not going to get exposed to it otherwise, I'm all for. So if Miley Cyrus even though she's a pop star, somehow exposes a younger bunch of kids to a Pink Floyd song or a Soundgarden song or Temple of the Dog song. I'm 100% in. I think it's great.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's probably, you just said it perfectly, because that's right. You know, there's a lot of, there's going to be a drop off of music fans that are just going to miss out on something. And sometimes people revisit things. Sure. And that, I'm sure that happens a lot, but it, sometimes it takes one person or a couple people to really kind of bring it out in the forefront and expose it in a different way to really intrigue people and keep the fires burning, really, because these artists, I mean, they're here on this planet for a short amount of time and they deliver, especially a guy like Chris Cornell, amazing artist, individual, songwriter, whatever you would bring. He was the complete package, you know? So in this environment, during this concert with all these different people of eclectic tastes, you know, we had Chris Stapleton, Ziggy Marley, like I said, Metallica. There was an ensemble with Geezer Butler, like a Tom Morello, a bunch of different people doing the kind of the hard rock side of Soundgarden. So it's amazing all the sides that were represented. This happened at the Forum back in January, but it's still a memorable concert for me. I think it was one of my favorite concerts, definitely for 2019.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I could tell you, you got any more or can I, I'll list off a few of mine.
Yeah. Go for yours. Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, there's so many and I literally, the only way I'm remembering these is I'm going through my Facebook page looking at what I posted, but Damon Johnson back in January, played a little club in New York City and it was such a great show, busting through like his career. Like it was a career retrospective, you know, you got Alice Cooper and Thin Lizzy songs and, you know, covers of Thin Lizzy songs. But you also got his stuff from, you know, Brother Kane and, you know, so much stuff, his solo album stuff and Black Star Riders stuff. It was just a great night. And it was just one great song after another performed in front of a relatively small crowd, which it just bums me out. I mean, last night, like I said, I saw Last in Line, another great show, and they've been through my area a number of times within the last 4 years, 3 years, like almost too many times. And it saddened me that the club was half full. I mean, this is a club. I mean, you got a member of Black Sabbath, you got a member of Ozzy Osbourne's band on stage, you got you know, a member of Dio and Def Leppard on stage. Def Leppard, you know, fills an arena easily in this area, and it was like 100 people in the club, you know, which is just crazy to me. But anyways, those were two great shows and many in between. Warrant, you know, I was never a Warrant guy back in the day, but every time I see them, they're so good. I saw them twice this year. The first time was really, really great in New Jersey at Starland Ballroom. Trying to think. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the two big guys for me were Iron Maiden and Kiss this year. Saw Kiss twice. I had horrible seats at Madison Square Garden when they played there. But there was something that was truly magical about that night. And I think I had just as much fun there, if not more fun, than I did when I had third row this fall in New Jersey for Kiss again. Iron Maiden I saw this past summer, and there's something religious like whenever I go see them, and this was no exception. Saw Ghost a number of times. They're always a band that I love. Trying to think of who else.
Oh, you saw Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses was good. Guns N' Roses was good. I was, my mindset was a little off for that because they went on at 11 p.m., you know, Cali time, which for me was like two in the morning. Yeah, so I was a little tired, but they were great. They were great, definitely. Saw Cheap Trick. I wouldn't put them quite up there. It was kind of a weird, I saw Cheap Trick in New Jersey. It's kind of a weird set, like too many deep cuts for me. I was more I'm more the casual Cheap Trick guy.
I saw Cheap Trick too. They played out here. It was for, we have a Navy installation out here and they had like their Navy night and they were the band that was playing. I guess last year Vince Neil's band played, but it was in front of an aircraft carrier down into the port of San Pedro, and they were the band that played. And I mean, that was the first time I seen Cheap Trick. That's one band I missed. And yeah, they did play a lot of deep cuts, and you know, they've aged a little bit.
I'm not a deep cut guy when it comes to Cheap Trick.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I was glad to found them though.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And Fate's Warning and Queensryche, that was fun. Although I will say that this was a double bill. I will say this year when I saw Jeff Tate play, I was almost a little more excited than I had been at the Queensryche concert I also saw this year. Trying to think. Yeah, Fu Manchu I saw up at Heavy Montreal, and they really were one of my favorite bands. I think at M3 this year, I thought Quiet Riot really stole the show. Kingdom Come and Quiet Riot were really, really great, and James Durbin was a big part of the reason Quiet Riot was so great. So I was sad to hear that he was out of Quiet Riot a few weeks ago or a month ago. But I guess there's so many that I could go on, because Emily and I go to a ton of concerts, but I guess the two that rise to the top for me, you know, in 2018 I probably would have said Ghost. But this, and I saw Ghost twice this year, but I think this year for me, the two biggies that were just emotionally kind of and spiritually and musically the ones that meant the most to me were Iron Maiden and both Kiss shows that I saw in Newark, New Jersey, and in Manhattan, New York City. So I'll go with those two, because there were a lot of other shows, but I think those were my favorites.
It's very hard to pick, because, you know, when you go out and you specifically see these artists, it's a big deal, because it's like part of our music catalog, you know, and we're putting down money, or we're paying for a t-shirt, or buying a piece of merchandise, you know, I'm all in, you know, I want to support these bands in any sort of way. So it's really hard to pick one, because there's also all these dimensions of different bands. You know, we talked about Fu Manchu, which is kind of a stoner rock thing, Iron Maiden, or Danko Jones, or Uli Roth is kind of the footstep back into the 70s with, you know, Uriah Heep. And, you know, so it's hard to really pick, you know. I mean, Sebastian Bach, that was a killer show. He went through, he played Slave to the Grind front and back. And Brent Woods was playing with them. He's an amazing guitarist. So all of these shows, it's really hard to pick.
You know who I had fun seeing, and I wasn't even like, I'm not even like a major fan. Like, I really like a lot of his radio stuff, but freaking Bryan Adams, saw him this year. Man, it's so freaking good. And again, I don't think I ever bought one Bryan Adams record. I think I had a few of his songs that I like taped off the radio as a kid, but I don't think I ever bought a record as a kid. But man, he was great.
There's a guy, I'm sure he brings it. I mean, he's definitely. Yeah, I would like to see him, not just because, like you say, just kind of more of the casual fan. But when you grow up with this sort of stuff, it really sticks as time goes on. You know, you're like, yeah, that was a good song. Hey, not bad, you know?
Absolutely.
So awesome. I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk. Is there any shows you're looking forward to by the end of the year that you're on your radar?
You know, it's weird. The shows really drop off, at least in my neck of the woods, the tours and concerts. It's like this December and January and a lot of times February are really dry. I think we're going to go see maybe The Cult and maybe Rat. I think that's in December in New Jersey. So I'm always looking forward to those. My goal for 2020 is, you know, in previous years, I've gotten to a lot of like non-metal shows, non-hard rock shows. And I feel like in 2019, there was really only one or two of those for me. So I like to stay diverse. So one of my goals is to kind of expand the boundaries of my concert going experience, my 2019 concert going experience in 2020. But I'm always looking forward to Heavy Montreal. I'm always looking forward to M3. What else? Ozzy Osbourne is on the calendar, the Makeup show at the Garden. Looking forward to that. I have really good seats for that. And I don't really know right now what other shows I have tickets for. So I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Okay. No worries.
Yeah. What about you?
Some good ones. we have some good ones. We got a King Diamond Uncle Acid show at in December.
Okay, cool. I like Uncle Acid, by the way. Good stuff. I think I played a track of theirs on a previous episode here.
Had you seen them before?
I have not, no.
Good band. Good band. They're really good. We have Slayer. It's kind of closing out at the Forum out here in November. High on Fire with Power Trip. It should be a good show. It's out here at the Observatory in Santa Ana.
Cool.
Dark Angel. Not Dark Angel. Death Angel at the Whiskey. Angel, right. And Metal Blade does this brewery show where they combine two nights and they bring out thrash bands, Metal Blade underground bands. I think Possess is going to play. Violence is reforming to play this. So that would be a really cool thing.
Yeah, Possessed have been doing some shows. So that's awesome.
So yeah, there's that's happening. And Mr. Bungle is doing like a three-night thing.
Right,
over here
I heard that. Scott Ian's playing with him or something?
Yeah. It's going to be a pretty, that's probably going to be the show of the year as far as that kind of ilk of artists, and Mr. Bungle is kind of so eclectic for people that never got a chance to see them. This is their opportunity, and I'm sure it's going to be a highly coveted ticket. So yeah, I guess absolutely. I'll probably see at least three of those shows.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I never seen Mr. Bungle. I saw like Tomahawk and some of Mike Patton's other stuff, Fantomas, but never saw Mr. Bungle. So, all right, Carl, well, I have to wrap it up and go to bed. So it is,
But hey, yeah. Good talking to you. I'm glad we caught up, and we'll do it sometime in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. It is Sunday night. We are recording this just for the record on November 10th. I hope to post it on the 12th. But we'll see. So as always, it was great hanging with you in LA. I really appreciate you taking the time to come down and hang with Emily and I at the Rainbow. And as always, thank you for joining me here on the Talking Metal Podcast.
Great talking to you, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, cool. And to take us out, we're going to do a little Iron Maiden. This is going way back. Let's hit some Paul Di'Anno era Iron Maiden. This is Murders in the Rue Morgue.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.